As we're hearing in the news, the state's Supreme Court ruled earlier this afternoon that the state's Republican-drawn legislative maps are unconstitutional. Republicans have held big majorities in the state legislature for more than a decade, thanks in part to favorable district lines. The 4-3 decision by the court today means the state will likely have to draw new maps. Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is with us for an update. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rob.
Tell us, what was the majority's argument here? They painted this as common sense arguments about contiguous districts.
Yeah, that is what it boiled down to. I mean, for all that we've talked about with these legislative maps for more than a decade now and a variety of court challenges, what the court's liberal majority ended up saying here is that these maps are unconstitutional because the districts aren't contiguous. The word contiguous has been interpreted by courts over the last, 50 or so years to mean different things. But the court's majority, in an opinion written by Jill Krofsky, said it means what it says, that it's common sense that contiguous means you have to have adjoining territory. And in about 50 assembly districts and 20 Senate districts, you don't have that. So the maps are unconstitutional and we're going to have new ones.
The conservative minority, each of the justices, I believe, wrote their own opinion. Sean, I gave a quick breeze through some strong language there saying, hey, this is outcome-based judging. What did we see there?
Yeah, I mean, the if you look at this opinion, which is very lengthy, it is mostly dissents in this case. You had Justices Annette Ziegler, Rebecca Bradley, and Brian Hagedorn each writing their own. They talk about this opinion in their words. They frame it as the first opinion by an openly progressive faction where the members of the majority, quote, shed their robes, usurped the prerogative of the legislature, and delivered the spoils to their preferred political party. These handmaidens of the Democratic Party, this is from Justice Rebecca Bradley, quote, trample the rule of law. So very strong wording there. You wouldn't expect anything less than a dissent. But the majority opinion, much shorter, says, look, this is the way it is. The Constitution says they need to be contiguous. These are not contiguous. And we're going to have to draw new maps.
So who's we? Who draws these maps?
It depends. The court says... the court leaves it open for the legislature to draw new maps, and that, of course, would require the governor to sign them. We have a Republican legislature. They like these maps, and Democratic Governor Tony Evers does not, and the idea of them getting together on a set of compromise maps seems pretty unlikely. And so the court does say that, assuming that the maps can't pass the legislature and be signed the governor, they will begin the process of redistricting. The legislature, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss specifically, said today in a statement that the U.S. Supreme Court will have the final say in this case. Now, precisely what that means, we don't know, but that is where, he is turning his attention to now. He wants to fight this, it sounds like, through some sort of appeal at the federal level through the U.S. Supreme Court.
And Sean, we have an election coming up next year. When do these maps have to be in place?
Plaintiffs were initially arguing they needed to be in place by the spring, basically, so that candidates could start circulating petitions to run in these new districts. So if you're looking at March or April as a deadline for this, that's not a whole lot of time for something to get done here, but it's a few months. I expect you're going to have a busy few months of redistricting news between here and the court, the legislature, the governor's office, and potentially, we'll see what happens, an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And I'm sure we'll be back in touch with you, Sean, all through this process. Thanks for getting us up to speed.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He talked with us about today's state Supreme Court ruling that found Wisconsin's current legislative election maps to be unconstitutional. Now, the Colorado State Supreme Court ruled this week that former President Donald Trump is disqualified from the presidential ballot in that state. The court found that Trump violated the 14th Amendment's insurrection clause for his involvement with the attack at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. The ruling's on hold as attorneys for Trump now are appealing the case to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is likely to make a final decision that will have impacts across the country. A similar lawsuit has been filed in state courts in Wisconsin and several other states, while the Minnesota Supreme Court already rejected a 14th Amendment case against Trump, at least for the presidential primary. We're learning more about the legal arguments surrounding this. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this Colorado Supreme Court ruling? Do you agree with the outcome? Why or why not? What questions do you have about the many moving parts in these court cases? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of several books on politics and law, including Trumpism, American Politics in the Age of Politainment. David, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, and happy holidays to everybody.
All right. We've talked about this before, David, in your home state of Minnesota. How big a deal is this Colorado ruling saying, nope, the former president can't be on the ballot in the presidential primary or the runoff as they rule it?
Both legally and politically, it's a big deal here. From a legal point of view, it's an interpretation that if accepted by let's say, the U.S. Supreme Court or by other state courts, it could lead to Trump being kicked off the ballot all across the country. So that's the first issue. And that's why, because it's an interpretation also of the Constitution, that is the 14th Amendment, it's likely to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. But politically, this has many prongs to it. You know, one of them, as I just mentioned, potentially it means he's not just off the ballot in Colorado, but with lawsuits pending, as you pointed out there, in Wisconsin and many, many other states, Trump potentially could be thrown off the ballot in lots of states. And before the voters even get to cast a single vote, the election could almost be decided. And then yet another political dimension is how this plays out with Trump's narrative, which he's been arguing, of saying that 4 years ago, it was a stolen election. They're trying to steal it again now. How does this deal with political mobilization of his base? It goes in lots of different directions. But this is important because prior to today, rather, I should say, prior to the Colorado Supreme Court decision, 0-7. What I mean by that, there were seven lawsuits that had been decided and saying that Trump, for a variety of reasons, is not going to be taken off the ballot because of the insurrection clause. This was the first court to say, yes, in fact, he can be taken off the ballot or prevented from going on the ballot.
Remind us of the basic case here that some, including some conservative legal scholars, have made that the 14th Amendment, this one clause, applies to former President Trump.
Sure. Okay. So what we have is a clause that was adopted in the 14th Amendment, Section 3, after the Civil War. And paraphrasing it roughly, it says that individuals who had previously held office in the United States and had taken an oath to uphold the Constitution could be basically prevented from holding office in the future unless Congress, by a two-thirds vote, allows them to do so. It's called the Insurrection Clause. Most legal historians say that this clause was written to address problems right after the Civil War, when former members of Congress who fled, became part of the Confederacy, wanted to run again for Congress. And so it was, some people say, address that. But some conservative legal scholars have argued that the clause is still alive and still can be used if, in fact, you accept the fact that the clause still applies today, that the presidency is an office as specified under the Insurrection Clause, that the clause can be what's called self-executing or self-enforcing, and what Trump did on January 6, 2021, constituted insurrection. And that's essentially what the Colorado Supreme Court reached the conclusion is on all those points.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've read a couple of pieces by liberal legal scholars who in these pieces say, I don't want the former president to become president again. They say it would be bad for the country, but that should be done by voters, that this is a misapplication of the law that sets a bad precedent. This is definitely not a slam dunk argument, regardless in some cases of political perspective.
you're absolutely correct at this point. You've got some conservatives, some liberals saying this is the way, if you don't like Trump, to address what Trump did. But a lot of people are arguing that in a democracy, at the end of the day, the people get the choice. They get to make their own decisions. And many people argue that almost a quarter century ago, when the U.S. Supreme Court rendered Bush v. Gore and decided the case about electoral votes and vote counting in Florida and effectively decided the election, many people have said, we should, at the end of the day, let the people decide who gets elected, not let the courts who get decided. And that's a broader question about democracy, on top of which the outline that I gave you in terms of was it an insurrection? Does it still apply? The clause still apply? Is it self-executing? These are all incredibly contestable legal points that will become the basis for appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We're talking to political science and law professor David Schultz about the Colorado State Supreme Court ruling that Donald Trump is ineligible for the presidential ballot in that state, what this means for the election as a whole, what could be coming to the U.S. Supreme Court. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University of Law at the University of Minnesota, looking at the Colorado Supreme Court decision that would make former President Trump ineligible for the presidential ballot in that state based on a clause in the 14th Amendment. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Fairchild. Chris, hi.
Hi. Well, first off, I had a comment here. I just wanted to say I work from a default position that the 14th Section 3 would be self-executing. It is the Constitution which precludes Mr. Trump, not the courts, whereas they did some of the light work. But I guess my question to the guest would be, I tend to draw a straight line from the United States and perhaps the failure to prosecute Jefferson Davis after the Civil War to this moment. And I was wondering what your introspect on that would be. If had we answered this question, say, 140 years ago, would we not be in this position today?
Interesting question, Chris. David, what do you think?
That is a great historical question here, which we could probably do an entire show on. But yes, the quite possibly the decision at the end of the day not to proceed with a trial of treason against Jefferson Davis. And for people who don't remember, Jefferson Davis was the head of the Confederacy, the president of the Confederacy, and the U.S. government abandoned its case against him. Had they proceeded and reached a judgment on the merits, you know, a real verdict, we might be in a very different position historically today than we were back then. But because we didn't, we have a lot of questions open. And again, I'm not taking a position one way or the other, on this matter here. The Colorado Supreme Court decision is hefty. It's between the dissent and the majority opinion, it's well over 200 pages. And all the questions, like the reader referred to here, about does the insurrection clause apply and stuff like that, these become the basis of appeal when the case likely gets to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Thanks a lot for that call, Chris. We'll go to Steve now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think at this point now, it's fair to say the Democrats, the liberals, the progressives, all those people within the swamp that match that, it's fair to say they have lost the moral high ground when it comes to threats to democracy. We see it here. We've seen it just recently with the maps when unethical Janet made a decision to throw out the Wisconsin maps while the Democrats refuse to have a compromise solution because they know the Supreme Court will give them the maps they want. And the fact in the last election, the Democrats worked their tails off to keep the Green Party off the ballot to benefit the Democrats.
Steve, I gotcha. I want to focus in on Steve's thoughts, David, about this this particular case. He's saying, hey, this is a transparent effort by Democrats to keep former President Trump off the ballot. A lot of the cases, interestingly, filed by a long shot Republican presidential candidate, not one on the debate stage. But that perception definitely out there. Steve's not alone in that thinking.
Well, I was going to say, first off, the article that is sort of the genesis of this entire claim was written by two conservative legal scholars, one of who served in the first George Bush administration. And we have both, again, as you pointed out, liberals and conservatives or Democrats, Republicans, however you want to categorize it, who are both on the side of saying use the clause and not use it. And as you pointed out, in many cases, the groups that are bringing the lawsuits have connections to Republicans. And so factually, I don't think it's accurate what the caller said, but from a perception point of view, I think this is what's happening. And I think for Trump supporters, these lawsuits fit into the narrative that he used 3 years ago or 4 years ago about a stolen election. I think now he gets to use that stolen election mantra as a result of the Colorado opinion.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Dennis joins us now in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I realize with courts, they need to follow along with somebody is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But the thing is, there's also moral guilt. And from what's been going on, Trump is definitely morally guilty. And if Trump gets another chance at an election, it's just going to be the whole rigmarole all over again.
Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. I want to start with that innocent until proven guilty thing, David. And that's central to this argument about, is this clause self-executing, meaning it's automatically played? Just like if I had tried to run for president when I was 30 years old, well, the Constitution says nope. Somebody might have to file a court case to keep, if I try to run, they might have to do that. But it's automatic. That's part of the argument here with the insurrection clause. But 30 years old is one easy thing to measure. Insurrection right. is another thing to measure.
No, you're absolutely correct. And this is where it becomes more complicated now, because one of the issues here is, what does it mean to have an insurrection? What is, was an insurrection defined as? And but the lower courts in Colorado reached the conclusion that he engaged in insurrection. But this becomes an important question here, because remember, especially in the federal case against Donald Trump being brought in District of Columbia, involving events out of January 6th. Some of those questions, although he's not being put on trial for insurrection there, we have no proof of guilt that Donald Trump has done anything wrong yet. And this becomes an issue in the Colorado case where, and under the 14th Amendment, how do you go about determining if somebody is, quote, liable or guilty or whatever phrase, culpable for insurrection? It really wasn't a criminal trial. Trump's not been convicted of anything. And I think this becomes one of the questions, again, that the Supreme Court will have to grapple with. And I think one of the arguments that the dissenters in the Colorado case said is that Donald Trump didn't get appropriate due process in terms of this determination. Now, the question about whether or not somebody is morally culpable for doing things, I leave that to the listeners in terms of rendering their own judgment.
Time for one more caller. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hi.
Very much. I'm something of a legalist, Civil War legal historian. And what everyone seems to be missing is that there is an act. It's the Act of 1795 that specifically defines insurrection. I believe it pertained to the Whiskey Rebellion, thanks to George Washington, and is defined as the specific criteria for insurrection is when local law enforcement is overwhelmed. They specifically mention U.S. Marshals and the justice system. It seems to me that on January 6th, the local law enforcement was clearly overwhelmed. And to answer the after Civil War in Jefferson Davis, the War Department did specifically charge Jefferson Davis with planning the Lincoln assassination, but that was never followed through for a variety of reasons.
And Kate, thanks a lot. We don't have a lot of time left, but thanks for bringing that up. David, the 1795 guidance points toward this as an insurrection?
Possibly it does, but even if that provides the guidance, the questions still go back to the issue of whether or not the 14th Amendment applies to Trump, and that the facts that occurred, whatever the facts were on January 6th, actually rise to the level of a violation of that act, and whether that act, in fact, is the basis for determining insurrection under the 14th Amendment. Lots of still thorny legal questions. And as I sort of wrap up here, these will be the issues that the U.S. Supreme Court will likely have to take up when it gets the case early next year.
David, I won't ask you to predict what the U.S. Supreme Court is going to do here. You mentioned early next year. How soon do you expect we'll have some sort of indication? Because, you know, all this while people are getting on ballots.
I think you're right. I think it's going to happen sooner as opposed to later in January. If I'm going to give a prediction here, they'll find some way to overturn the Colorado Supreme Court decision without ruling on the merits, which means they're not going to address the question and say he did or he did not engage in insurrection. I think they're likely to say something along the lines of that the clause is not self-executing and therefore void the decision. But I could be surprised.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota, with us today to talk about the Colorado State Supreme Court taking Donald Trump off the ballot in that state based on a 14th Amendment clause and what that decision means for the election.